Marcy Baldwin. I have a learning disability, and I would be really, really scared if American company had my private medical information and all my other private information. I would like to join your group. I'm on the Canadian board for community living that we meet in Toronto, Ontario, and we're having a big meeting in Ottawa in November for an education meeting. And I would certainly bring this topic with me to share with all my friends, because I have a lot of friends that have learning disabilities, and this really scares me, so I'm sure it'll scare a lot of others.
Well, thanks for taking the word out, Marcy.
Thanks
lots. Okay. Other.
Hi. Well, first, thanks, Mr. Jaffer, for the presentation. It was terrific, and thanks to the folks who organized this and the Right to Privacy campaign. My name is Mark Fierkamp, and I'm with an organization called BC Citizens for Public Power. And our purpose is we're basically fighting a pitched battle to stop the privatization of our public electricity utility. And we win some of these battles, and we lose some. The one we lost was privatization of a third of the employees and operations to Accenture. And Accenture, I'm sure you guys in the States hear a lot about now with their $10 billion contract to administer the borderline security operation. So obviously we're starting to do a little bit more research into this and want to talk more with the folks involved in this campaign to see where it's going, but it sure looks like there's a lot of parallels between what they're trying to stop with the MSP privatization and what we've already got in place. And so we need to know a little bit more about how Accenture actually manages its information and those kind of things. And Accenture is a funny company because they're a bizarre structure. They say to one branch of the American government. Okay, let me just say this. I just wanted to ask. My point of my question is to ask about the tribunal or the court, the secret court, and if there's any. How the court works in terms of its processes. Are there plaintiffs? Are there defendants? I just want to understand how this process might work. And maybe they just haven't been upfront about how that process works.
Well, that makes two of us. The court doesn't publish any rules or procedures. When they issued a public decision in 2002, that was the first time they'd ever published a decision. And to be honest, that's the first time I had ever heard of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. We don't know anything about it. We're contemplating filing a Freedom of Information Act request for information about the court, but just because of the troubles we've had getting past what's known as the national security exemption in the Freedom of Information Act, we're not even sure it's worth the effort. We're also pursuing other avenues to get that kind of information through Congress or through congressional subcommittees. But as of now, I mean, you really have as much information as I do about the court. There's one thing that I think is outrageous, and that's that if you go to law school in the United States, nobody ever tells you about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. What they tell you is that if the government wants to search your home or wiretap your phone, they need to show probable cause. That's something, it's sort of a first principle that you learn in law school. So it was news to me that there was this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, but what came as an even greater shock is that last year, for the first time in history, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court issued more surveillance warrants, more wiretap warrants, than all federal and state courts in the country combined. I think that's a shocking statistic. If you add up all the drug cases, all the gambling cases, all the federal and state court cases combined, you still don't get to the number of surveillance warrants issued by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And I think that it's a travesty that we don't know more about how the court works.
Do members of Congress know how it works?
There's an intelligence subcommittee of the Senate and of the House, and yes, I mean, they have access to information that we don't have access to. Whether they've actually read the information, I don't know.
Okay, thanks. Next question.
Thanks. My name is George Heyman, and I want to just put out a couple of pieces of information to before I get to the question. And I'd like to thank Jamil for coming up and sharing his knowledge of the Patriot Act with all of us here, and by extension with other British Columbians and Canadians. You correctly pointed out in your opening remarks, Michael, that the government is heading very quickly to an August 31st date to finalize the contract with an American corporation for the administration of Medical Service Plan and PharmaCare. That is the basis of the BCGEU's legal challenge to that privatization, as well as a referral to BC's Privacy Commissioner around the concerns of the Patriot Act. But there's a number of other information processing contracts that are being proposed or have been let. One of them has been let, Payroll Services, which gives an American corporation access to huge amounts of personal information of people who have or currently work for the government, which can include whether there's liens, their debt records, et cetera, loans they've applied for. There are proposals to privatize access to handling people's income assistance applications, as well as asking further questions, which is a tremendous intrusion into people's right to privacy. There are other proposals that have been let, and the BCGEU has referred all of them in a series to the Privacy Commissioner, and to his credit, he is looking into them. My question is, though, that the time frame is tight, and legal challenges notwithstanding, I believe that that the importance of the whole issue of people's right to privacy being challenged in such a fundamental way by corporate decisions of a right-wing government to privatize record-keeping, a public service function based on ideology, has to be a political one, which means people being so outraged by the implications of what they propose that the politicians simply and the cabinet simply feels too much heat to proceed with it. And again, as we've pointed out, the time frame is short. So I would ask the representatives of the coalition here what plans beyond meetings like this, which are very important, you may have or you may be entertaining that those of us here and our friends can participate in to raise the profile of this issue very, very quickly and to put heat on the government very, very quickly before they sign a contract that could only be reversed by the courts, which, while an important step, is one hopefully we won't have to get to.
Thanks.
I think the only thing we can do is, I'm Daryl Evans from BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association, is just continue to build the campaign, add more and more groups to endorse it, and trust the BCU's court case is going to be decisive. And beyond that, make submissions to the commissioner. All groups are invited to do that. And if you need help making submissions, we'll put together a workshop to help you do that. So communicate through the website, righttoprivacycampaign.com, just as you'd think, and get in touch. That'll be the central communications office for it, and we'll just keep doing more submissions, adding more groups, possibly taking further advertising steps, and try to build a juggernaut. Let's keep in mind that you may remember that about 4 years ago there was a national scandal over the Human Resources Development Corporation, what was called the Longitudinal Database, that became known as the Big Brother Database, which linked 2,000 plus pieces of information about individuals. Unfortunately, the Privacy Commissioner of Canada looked at it and said, you know, within the privacy law of Canada, there's really nothing illegal about this, but the public should have a right to know. And also, it's against the spirit of the Act, even though it isn't against the letter of the Act. That caused a couple of radio stations asked people to make freedom of information requests. That federally they're called access to information requests, or under the Privacy Act, you can do either. Requests for their own file at HRDC. There was such a flood of requests that they canceled the program. They canceled the program. We'll be looking for innovative ways and levers of going at this, but I really think that it's George Heyman is right. Public pressure is one thing we've got to do, but I think it's also got to make its way through the courts. The commissioner's decision is going to make have a lot of weight also, but I think it's really up to the public and what we all choose to do about this. Write letters to your MLAs. Again, there's contacts through the website.
There is a website, by the way, that you can actually send a submission to the Information and Privacy Commissioner. It's info@oipc.bc.ca. And if you as a citizen want to make your voices heard, get it into that website and file that form. You don't have to be a legal beagle to do it. There are other people handling the legal side. Get your personal message to the Information and Privacy Commissioner.